You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Good evening and welcome to Last Word on Hockey's radio podcast on the Power Play. The trade deadline has come and gone, and so we are wrapping it all up here at Last Word on Hockey. Joining me for this special edition of the podcast is Colton Prail. Colton, how are you doing tonight?
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Eric Carlson's a Senator.
Eric Carlson stays in Ottawa. So we are going to go through the trades. We may talk about the moves not made, like the Eric Carlson non-move and some others. What it means going forward, what it means for the rest of the season, what it means for the offseason. But we've got a new format tonight. We haven't prepared anything for the show. We've been a bit lazy. So we're going to wing it. Colton's going to suggest the topic. We're both going to riff on it. And then we're going to move on to the next trade after that. A 10-minute time limit on all deals. And away we go. So, Colton, you're up first. What move do you want?
Paul Stastny traded to the Winnipeg Jets. What the hell were the Blues thinking, Beak?
The Blues have lost, I believe, 5 or 6 in a row. They are outside the playoffs looking in. A team that many had as a cup contender, at the end of 40 games, we were looking at them as a cup contender. Even at the end of 50 games, we were looking at them as a cup contender. And in the last couple weeks since the All-Star break have just fallen apart. They've decided to get some assets for a guy that they probably won't be re-signing this year. I think they think Robbie Fabry jumps into that second-line spot next season when he's healthy. And down the road, they have Robert Thomas and Klim Kostin in their minor league system. They've decided that this isn't the year for the Blues and decided to move on from Paul Stastny. My question is, if you sell Paul Stastny, why are you keeping Jay Bouwmeester?
Best question. Oh my gosh. The only thing I can think of is that there was no market for Jay Bouwmeester, which is weird when Ryan Hartman can. Oh, we'll get to that later. I agree with you, though. I think this looks a little bad because it is the Blues and they've been in playoff contention for so long, and it kind of feels like giving up. But when you see that they weren't willing to deal any of those four forward prospects that they have, Kyrou, Kostin, Thomas, etc., it really makes sense. You know, this is a team, especially with guys like Fabry, who is still young enough and their prospects are at the right age together, that, you know, they'll be in a position to win in 2-3 years time still. So this isn't a terrible move. I don't hate it by any means. It is a little disappointing, though, if you're a Blues fan, to see what looks like the team throwing in the towel.
Yeah. What about the Jets, though? The Jets are a team that wanted Derek Brassard, got blocked on that move by Vegas, apparently got blocked on Mark Letestu by Nashville. We're in on Thomas Plekanec and basically had, from what I hear, a very similar offer to what got it done. But Plekanec asked the Canadiens to keep him in the Eastern Conference. He didn't have a clause, a no-trade clause or anything like that. But Marc Bergevin fulfilled his request, and we'll talk a little bit about why I think he did that later. But in any event, there were three centers they went after, couldn't get any of them. And somehow they end up at the end of the deadline with Paul Stastny, someone who no one saw on the market until the deal actually went down. Wasn't even on, you know, on Sportsnet's trade watch list or TSN's trade bait list. We usually have our stuff prepared in advance for guys we think will be traded. And we didn't have anything prepared for him. No one really saw that move coming. So, kudos to Kevin Cheveldayoff for finding the third line center that he was looking so hard for. And he may have gotten the best third line center of anyone who made a deal. I mean, it's between Stastny and Brassard.
I was just going to say that. Brassard was the best center on the market, in my opinion. But Stastny is a fantastic pickup. And to get him from a division rival screams just... I don't want to say, I'm blanking on the word here. It's just a brilliant pickup. It's just plain and simple, a brilliant pickup, and one I didn't expect from Cheveldayoff. You know, typically Winnipeg is pretty quiet at the deadline. I think this was the year to buy in, and this is a fantastic buy. If they weren't already your team coming out of the West, or at least making it to the West Final, I think they have to be now.
Yeah, that top nine, I mean, Shifley, Little, and Stastny down the middle. Guys like Wheeler and Line A and Ehlers on the wings, you know, and Matthew Perreault and all the talent that they've put together in Winnipeg. Incredibly impressive. Who's the left winger? Is it Kyle Connor?
Yep.
Kyle Connor.
Yeah.
And Jack Roslovic looks really good. They didn't have to give him up to make this move. I really like it from the Jets' standpoint. I really like what they've done. I think they've got a lot of talent there, and they could go a long way in the West. They've also got a pretty deep blue line. A bit of a scare with Tobias Enstrom going down today in practice, but that apparently is just a bruise from what Paul Maurice said, so nothing major there. And they added a... I mean, we'll include this because I think this is a minor enough deal that we don't have to get too much into it. But they added some depth in Joe Morrow late in the day. I mean, Tobias Enstrom's not who he used to be. He's a third pairing D for the Jets now. And I think Joe Morrow has a similar profile. Probably not as good, but could probably fill in for him if there's any injury concern there.
Yeah, no, I really liked Winnipeg's day today. What you got? What trade?
All right, let's go to one that came in apparently at 2:59 to the NHL trade office, and that is Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller to the Tampa Bay Lightning for Vladislav Namestnikov, a first-round pick, a conditional second-round pick, and Brett Howden and Libor Hajcek.
Fantastic return from the Rangers. They were getting younger. They were looking to improve. I love Namestnikov. I've been a big fan of his for the past three seasons. Really like that pickup. It's a little disappointing for the Lightning to have to let him go, but based on what you're getting back, I don't mind it. Brett Howden, I've got to see him a bit just being in Regina. He's only 30 minutes down the road. He looks really solid going two ways, and the Rangers need that. I think the one concern I'd have from the Rangers is you're getting two centers here, and you already have a boatload of centers. So who's going to play wing? That's the real question going forward. From the Tampa Bay perspective, this is a brilliant trade. Ryan McDonagh and Anton Stralman have that chemistry from New York. If you want to look at separating Stralman from Hedman, or if you just want to play McDonagh on the second pairing, I mean, no matter how you shake it, it's great. And JT Miller had some solid depth for when you're losing in Namestnikov. I think this is a brilliant trade for the Lightning. I think the Rangers, you know, got pretty good, if not fair value, then better than fair value. And I'm not too upset at the Lightning losing out because they didn't give up on Sergachev or Point or Johnson. They still have their team all around. This is a good hockey trade for everyone.
Yeah, I like the return for the Rangers a lot. I mean, I think Namestnikov is better than JT Miller. I think that move has the salary cap all over it because Namestnikov's having his best ever season. He's a restricted free agent. He's 25 years old. Tampa's got a lot of players to sign and a lot of cap room going to be eaten up by the moves that they need to make. And so this is a move that needed to, you know, getting Miller is not that much of a downgrade, but it is a cost savings move for them up front. And at the blue line, I mean, they really needed a top four defenseman, and they've gotten a guy in McDonagh who's a legit number two defenseman.
Yeah.
And he can drive possession on the second pair for them if he's separate from Hedman. Let Hedman drive one pair. He can drive the other pair. Strahlman's an excellent guy. It lessens Mikhail Sergachev's minutes and responsibility. He can get back into the role he was in early in the year when he was putting up a lot of points, which was sheltered third pair minutes and power play time and not having to carry much of a defensive load. And I think that's good for him in the playoffs. I think he's got a ton of potential, but he's 19 years old. You don't want to rely on a 19-year-old in your top four defense going into the playoffs if you're a true cup contender. Just not a lot of 19-year-olds who can handle that type of responsibility at that age in the NHL. So I really like the move from Tampa's perspective, getting what they did. And I think Hajek is a heck of a defenseman to me, probably top four defensemen in the entire league, in the Western Hockey League. Brett Howden's very solid. I'm not sure he'll ever be a first line player in the NHL, but depending on how he develops, he goes between the second and third line. And if the biggest problem is how many centers the New York Rangers have right now, that's a good problem for a lot of teams because you can always move centers to the wing.
Oh, completely agree. Completely. The one thing I will mention before we move on here is I saw some mentions that Yzerman was chasing Carlson so hard, but he continued chasing him after he knew he wasn't going to get it done to tie up a potential McDonough deal. Now, I don't know how true that is, but it certainly smells like Yzerman to me. And if that's the case, then the Lightning have themselves a winner if they didn't already know that in Steve Yzerman as GM. But let's move over. Pat Maroon headed to the Oilers, rejoining Taylor Hall. Ben, should Chiarelli stop talking to the Devils? Is that just the best option here?
No, I don't like what the Oilers got back in just a third.
I don't either.
Pick but I think the market never presented itself for Pat Maroon for whatever reason. The market just was not there. Apparently, the Oilers were asking for a second and prospect. We're looking for a big deal, and 10 minutes before the deadline, he took a third rounder to let him go. I don't have a huge problem with that. I mean, get rid of him. You got to get what you can get. If nobody's going to give you the second rounder, then you get rid of him. I do not like what Arizona did with Verbata last year and not moving him because they insisted on a second and refused to move him when they didn't get it. I don't like what the Detroit Red Wings did today and when they didn't get their asking price for Mike Green and held on to him. I just think it's pointless to hold a guy when you know you're not making the playoffs past the deadline because you had some arbitrary price that you wanted to get and nobody gave it to you, so you didn't sell at a cheaper rate. I mean, this is selling cherries. In business school, this is selling cherries. You've got to sell your cherries by the end of the day. And at the 11th hour, you take what you can get for them because they're going to go rotten if you hold them overnight and you won't get anything. So I think New Jersey benefits from getting a very cheap deal by waiting to the 11th hour and having the relationship with Edmonton. But I don't blame, as much as Chiarelli has made mistakes with the Oilers, I don't think that this is one of them. I think he's actually made a good move to get something.
I agree. I think getting anything for Pat Maroon was imperative and good on Chiarelli for doing it. If it was another GM, I think I would have a little more, I'd give them a little more benefit of the doubt. With Chiarelli, part of me wonders if there was something better out there. You know, if there was something better out there and he just wasn't playing hardball enough or he wasn't, you know, he just wasn't doing as good a job as he could just based on past Chiarelli trades, but the fact that he made the move and he at least shipped out Maroon is great. You know, that's at least a starting point for Oilers fans. And Maroon going out and saying, you know, I'd like to be back here on July 1st. You know, obviously there's many months between now and then. We'll see if he stays true to that. But if he does return, then getting a third and a prospect for a guy who's coming back is pretty solid. You know, we'll see how that deal looks in the summer, but they'd have had to have signed that anyways. Overall, I'm okay with this, you know?
Just don't overpay him in the summer because, let's be honest,
that's the big thing.
Pat Maroon's job is to go to the net, put your stick on the ice, and let Connor McDavid bounce pucks off of it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what he's doing for your team. And good on him because, you know, Milan Lucic should have the same job and apparently can't do that. So good on Pat Maroon for being able to pull that off, but it's not... it's not something that I think is irreplaceable either, so I don't think you want to overpay him more than maybe, say, $3 million a season. You don't want
his points per 60 only drops by about 0.2 away from McDavid, for what it's worth. I mean, he's not a terrible player without McDavid. I think that should be made clear. But his real job is, like you said, just to be, you know, McDavid's tipping guy.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where I am with Pat Maroon and him going forward. So let's move on. Let's look at another rental winger who moved, and that was yesterday with Rick Nash going to the Boston Bruins.
What a weird deal. Just a you know, for all of the pieces that are available on the market, I don't know that I love this one. And I get they gave a little extra just by with the Bolesky salary dump, and I understand that, but I don't know that I loved the return. It seemed really expensive for Rick Nash, who is a fine player, but he's not Rick Nash of 4 or 5 years ago. You know, he's not Rick Nash who played with the Jackets or who, you know, was dominant in the year that the Rangers went to the Eastern Conference Finals. I know he wasn't as strong in the playoffs, but he had a fairly strong year outside of it. It just seems, it feels like an overpay to me.
Oh, and did you see Dom Lucician's tweet on the deal?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Dom has his expected wins model.
Right. The game score one or the other one?
The expected points for the season.
Okay, yeah.
And based on the move, the Bruins actually went down by 0.7 points. Like, it's not a lot.
Yeah.
It's not a lot, and it could be, but he's basically saying you didn't improve your current team at all.
And you gave up a ton.
And you gave up all those, he's basically saying Ryan Spooner and Rick Nash is a wash. Spooner is controllable for a number of years. And then where Rick Nash is a rental. And then on top of that, you give up the first rounder and I believe it's a first and a third.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you gave up a lot to get Rick Nash, and I don't know how much it improved the Bruins team overall. And I have to agree with that. Rick Nash is the big name, and he's the Canadian Olympian, and he's scored 42 goals in the NHL, and this and that. I'm taking Evander Kane over Rick Nash. I'm taking a number of other wingers over Rick Nash. I'm almost comparing Rick Nash to Thomas Vanek.
Oh my gosh, that's where I was going next.
And so, to me, you gave up a lot for a name who, he doesn't bring what Rick Nash 5 years ago brought. People have to recognize where the drop-off has been in Rick Nash's game. And I get that they dumped Bolesky, which they were desperate to do, but they've still retained half of Bolesky's salary as well. So
Yeah, I don't love it either.
I don't love this move. I don't mind the other, and we might as well lump it in here. The Josh Holden for a third and O'Gara move.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind that one for the Bruins. I think they win on that deal.
I think so too.
But this deal, I'm not a fan of.
No, it's just, I mean, why don't we move to Thomas Vanek? Because that's what I was going to hit you with next. It just strikes me as paying for a big name who is not the player that he once was, especially when it comes to having a 200-foot game. And it's just a weird deal. I think they gave up way too much. I mean, Vanek got Tyler Mott and Jussi Jokinen, you know, which is like, but there's nothing there.
I love the Vanek deal from Columbus's perspective, okay?
I do too.
Vanek has gotten a bad reputation in the NHL. And this is where NHL general managers are a little too old school for me. Vanek's not clutch. Because
no.
Vanek went to Montreal that 1 year, and they went to the Final Four, and Vanek stunk.
Yep.
So now Vanek's not clutch, and nobody can ever rely on him in the playoffs. And he's not a playoff performer, so we're not going to give you anything for him. And Detroit had a problem unloading him last year. Vancouver's had a problem unloading him at the deadline this year. Both when he's got good numbers. I mean, the guy's got 40 points 17 goals in Vancouver. Yeah, his Corsi's, a little bit low, but he puts the puck in the back of the net and he finishes, and he's always been a pretty good scorer. And I think this is, I think both moves are reputation. Rick Nash has a reputation of coming up in the clutch, even though, because he's an Olympian, and because we've seen him do some fun things in the Olympics and score a few big goals with the Rangers. But overall, his playoff numbers are, there's nothing really there to speak of. Overall, some might say, if you believe in clutch, which I don't, but you could look at his playoff numbers and say he's not clutch. And to me, it's just BS on both sides. You look at Vanek, you look at Rick Nash, and based on the returns, I like the Vanek deal a lot better for Columbus. The other thing I really like about Columbus here is Vanek is a big-time power play guy, and mm-hmm. Columbus is 30th in the NHL. That's their biggest weakness is their power play and the inability for it to be able to score, and it's been a full calendar year. They were, in first place in the NHL last January, and it's been a full calendar year that this power play has been cold, and they get a weapon and a guy who's pretty good on the power play with it.
I was gonna say, remember all those Columbus has figured out how to have a power play articles that came out last fall? No, I agree with you. I think this is a huge win from Columbus. This is a massive drop of the ball by Benning. Not getting anything really back. Like, Jussi Jokinen is not helping your team.
Jokinen's a cap dump. Jussi Jokinen was in there to make this cap work. The only thing of value that the Vancouver Canucks here get is Tyler Motte, who's a 22-year-old center with potential to be a bottom six center who hasn't figured it out at the NHL level yet and is 22.
Yeah. Like, not getting any picks back here. And I know Benning came out and said, I wanted picks, but they weren't available to us. I don't buy that. You had Thomas Vanek, and you got, if you're taking on Jussi Jokinen and you're taking on their cap, you should be getting at least a fifth back, at least pull for a depth pick in there. There's no way that Jim Benning couldn't have gotten a fourth thrown in this deal, a fourth or a fifth. And I know that doesn't have a lot of value, but at least it's an attempt. It just is so strange to me that he couldn't get a pick. I'm not impressed. Not at all.
No, not impressed with Jim Benning, made so much out of last year and didn't get a lot here. He had another deal today. I don't mind that one. Philip Holm for Brandon Leipzig. A lot of people are criticizing that deal as well, not getting a pick for home. But I like Leipzig quite a bit in Vegas this year, and he's quite a bit younger than home, and I don't mind that move because Holm's an AHL defenseman who hasn't been able to crack the Canucks lineup, and he's 26.
Yeah. And the Canucks lineup.
Yeah, you're not cracking the Canucks lineup. Yeah, he's got nice stats in the AHL, but he hasn't been able to really make an NHL impact for Vancouver. I didn't think you were getting much for him. I don't mind getting Brandon Leipzig.
No, I like Brandon Leipzig. And if you're 26 in the AHL, you're an AHLer. You're not a prospect. There's no potential there. You're an AHLer. Unless there's been a massive misevaluation, you're not going anywhere. You're 26 and in the AHL for a reason.
Yeah, I understood putting him in the AHL to start the season because, okay, he's coming over from Europe. He's got to adjust to the ice size and whatever. But if you're not up in the NHL by November,
mm-hmm. Agreed.
It's something's not right if you're not up in the NHL by the end of November.
No, I completely agree.
All right. So is this my poll or yours here?
It's your poll.
All right, I'm going to have to go with the Derek Brassard to Pittsburgh deal.
Why'd you do that? Of all the deals you could have gone with, why'd you do that one?
I'll give my thoughts, no, but I'll let you go first.
Yeah, no. I want to hear your thoughts first before I go off on a Sens tirade.
Okay, well, first, let's start from the Penguins' perspective. This is brilliant from Rutherford. He needed a third line center. He got, as we said, arguably between Broussard and Stastny, he got the best center on the market. He got him cost controlled with an extra year on the contract, with Vegas eating 40% of the deal for him. So he's got him at a cheap cap number for next year as well. With the way the Penguins have been playing lately, with filling this hole, with Riley Sheehan going to the fourth line, who's been pretty good in Pittsburgh, and with everything that the Penguins have done, they picked up Josh Joris as well today. Just another depth body to have who could be a fourth line center if they get an injury up the middle. I really like what the Penguins did. Did the Penguins get a defenseman today? I don't think they did they?
No, I don't believe they did.
That's the only criticism I have from the Penguins' perspective, is they don't get a defenseman. I felt like they needed a defenseman. Some depth there. I heard they were in on a few names, but I didn't see if one actually came out. But,
oh, wait, they got Josh Joris. He's not a defenseman.
Joris a center, though? Yeah.
I think he's a winger. I think that was the only move they made, though.
Yeah. So they didn't get the defenseman, depth defenseman that they needed after letting Ian Cole go. And I think they got Broussard for a first-round pick, which is likely to be 25 or higher, a third-rounder, and they recoup a fourth-rounder. They get out Ryan Reeves' contract. I know it was an expiring deal, but they get that out to make this move happen. And I like what Pittsburgh's done here. And then the prospect who moved, Tobias Lindbergh, that's a nothing to me.
I kind of like Tobias Lindbergh, just as a depth player. Nothing crazy, but I don't mind him in the bottom six, especially in that fourth line. For me, this was... Yeah, I mean, look, it's a money move for the Sens, and I understand why they did it. Part of me wishes they could have got a little more. You know, Gustafsson is good. He fills a hole in the organization. They needed another goalie prospect. And we can talk about this at another time, but just the way they've treated Hogberg has made me a little cautious, especially to have another goalie coming over from Europe, and then you get two, and it's just a messy situation there. But the point is, they filled a hole in the organization. They got another first, which they didn't have this year, theoretically, because they can still option out the Colorado one. They get a third, which I think they only had one of, and Ian Cole, who they traded then for another third-round pick and a minor league prospect. I don't mind this deal overall. Keep in mind that Ian Cole third is in 2020, and the third they picked up from Pittsburgh is for 2019. So it doesn't help them a ton this draft, but it does help them going forward. I don't mind it. They were getting rid of Broussard either way, Broussard or Hoffman. And I think Hoffman makes a lot more sense to keep. So, you know, for me, this is a pretty strong deal from the Senators. And if you include the Dion Phaneuf trade and you don't focus on the drama that was the last 24, 48 hours around the Senators, I think Pierre Dorion actually had a fairly successful trade deadline for what this is. And you have to understand, this is owner-mandated money dumps.
Yeah,
I think Pierre Dorion did a good job of handling those.
I mean, I didn't like what they got for Phaneuf. I don't feel like they got really anything for Phaneuf.
No, but they got rid of the contract, which was the biggest thing.
The Broussard thing, I think they could have done a little bit better, but it's not terrible. Don't mind that deal that much. Vegas jumping in was kind of weird to block him from Winnipeg. It's pretty much the first time in a long time we've seen somebody do something like that. I can't recall anyone else doing that.
I love it.
If you've got the cap space to spend and that, I mean, I don't love Vegas picking up Ryan Reeves because...
No, I don't either. But I mean, right now, I think Vegas thinks this is their year to compete. You know, they didn't expect to be competing here, so they're going to compete here, and you have a chance to, what you think was going to be, deal a significant blow to one of your biggest competitors coming out of the same conference. I didn't mind it. Now, obviously, Winnipeg ends up with Stastny, but I think it's a smart move from McPhee.
I just think, I can see it. I just think that, you know, Winnipeg was going to get someone at forward.
Yeah. And that's fair. But I mean, like, it's like you said, like, no one saw Stastny on the market. So if you've got a way to keep the best center or who you expected to be the best center away from your number one competitor, I don't mind it, especially because it's the Knights and they have so much room to play with. I mean, if you're, you know, the Capitals or the Predators and you're looking at it and you don't have a ton of cap space, then no, don't do it. It doesn't make sense. But, you know, for a team like the Knights, I don't mind it because they're not going to be up against the cap anytime soon anyways.
No, they've got a ton of dead money coming off their cap, actually, in the offseason.
That's just
guys
it.
Guys like Grabowski and that.
Yeah, Neil.
Neil, they may resign. They may try to resign. But Grabowski is definitely coming off their cap.
Yeah. I didn't mind this meal. I'm not happy with the Senators over the last 48 hours. And we can talk about that later in the show. But this was, to me, not the worst thing that could have happened. But speaking of Vegas, stay with them for a second. I really like the Thomas Tatar move. I think maybe a little expensive, but I like Thomas Tatar a lot, and I think he's a solid player who will fit in really well on that team.
Yeah, I think he can put up his points in Vegas. He'll score his 20 to 25 goals with them. He brings some offense to the second line, gives them another dimension because that first line is so dynamic for the Golden Knights, and it just has been. Even racking up significant shots and scoring chance attempts. If that line that Marchessault, Ryan Smith and
Carlson
line, yeah, has been really good for them. And then this kind of gives them some secondary options besides David Perron and James Neal, who've been really good as well. So this gives them like another option in their forward group. I like it. I think Vegas needed the defenseman more, and we heard they were really hard in on Carlson until that fell apart. That couldn't happen, and they made this move instead. But I don't mind it. I think he's not your rental. You've got him for 3 years, and a little expensive, I think, but not that bad.
No, and if this move works out well, like if you put him with Marchessault and Smith, I really like it. I really, really like that move. He's someone I thought always did really well despite being hampered by the surrounding talent on the wings. And I think with the right players, he can be really effective.
Yeah, I wouldn't break up Carlson off that line, even though he's shooting 25%, right?
I wouldn't do it this year. But down the road,
when he's not shooting 25%, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that move a lot.
I mean, I ride that as long as it's working. I don't know. I can't explain why he's shooting 25%, but he just is.
No, exactly. I mean, it's TJ Oshie all over again. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
Cool. Your go.
All right. So let's go to another move with a first rounder and a young player. Ryan Hartman to the Nashville Predators.
How the hell does Ryan Hartman get you a first rounder? I don't get it.
I didn't.
Poile? Yeah, I think David Poile makes a lot of really savvy moves. I didn't get this one. Am I missing something on Ryan Hartman here?
He's a former first rounder. He scored a lot last year. He's 23 and cost controlled and I guess is more than just a rental, but I don't see first rounder back.
He really hasn't stood out to me that much.
He's a guy who put up a lot of goals and stuff. I think he was playing with Patrick Kane for a bit at the start of last season. And that's where a good majority of his goals came from. And so I love this deal from the Hawks. I'm not as crazy about it as from the Nashville Predators. I think Hartman's going to play on their third line. And, okay, if he gets you some speed and plays with Nick Bonino and does something, I don't know. I think Nashville overpaid seeing what Winnipeg was doing. Seeing what how open things are in the Western Conference, and it's going to be them and Winnipeg. And, you know, I don't believe in – I know
you're skeptical.
I'm still skeptical of Vegas really being a contender. I think it comes down to Nashville and Winnipeg out west, and who comes out of that division in the second round. And so I think that David Poile was not afraid to overpay to get the player that he wanted for his third and fourth line.
No, and you know what? This isn't – it's not terrible. You know, because of the position that they're in, it's not terrible because those picks weren't going to be great picks. You expect to be contending for a decent amount of time into the future just based on the age of your core and the age of your centers. I mean, this is a strong team, and they're going to remain a strong team for a little while. I think one team that'll be a surprise perhaps coming out of the West will be Dallas. I'm curious to see how Nashville and Winnipeg deal with, you know, that kind of defense. And I was surprised to see them stay steady, but I also, you know, understand why they did it, just with how well the team has been playing this year. But no, I don't mind it. You know, it's the right move from Nashville to get a player. I think it was just an expensive player. It was a good day. It was a good day for Chicago, you know. But I think getting anything for Tommy Wingles was solid, and getting this much for Ryan Hartman is really effective. How do you feel about Isdell? Edge solos.
He was the prize coming out of Sweden last year. He had a really strong season in the Allsvenskan last year. And he's moved up to the top level of Swedish hockey, is still putting up points. I think he's an intriguing prospect. I'd like to see him in the NHL. No real room for him in Nashville right now, based on their center depth. I mean, they're going to have Mike Fisher on the fourth line.
Yeah.
So there's no real room for him. And so I think that's a nice little pickup by the Blackhawks as well.
That was the book that I had heard as well. So I'm pleased with that if I'm Chicago. Is it your go or my go?
It's yours. I just pulled Hartman.
All right. You want to talk Evander Kane? Rumor has it there was only one real deal for him.
Again, reputation.
That's what I think too. And you know what? I can't blame a GM there. And I feel like you and I have talked about this before. I don't know if it's been on the show, but it's definitely been off the show. Sometimes you just don't want to screw with a locker room going into the playoffs. And so I really can't blame a GM for saying, you know what, maybe Evander Kane's not the guy for me at the deadline.
Yeah.
I don't mind the Sharks taking a whack on him, especially with the playmakers they have. Like, he'll fit in well. Can you imagine him beside Thornton on the power play?
Well, that's if Thornton even comes back, which nobody's quite sure of.
Yeah.
But with Couture or Pavelski, I could see him being very good with them. He's Evander Kane's everything you'd want in a winger. He's got the size. He's got the power. He can skate. He can shoot. He's the prototypical strong left wing, but yeah, I don't buy into a lot of intangibles, but there's something to be said about a harmonious locker room and how one person or one piece of drama can take down a team. I've seen enough with my eye test to know that that's true. And that's one area where I will buy into the issues and say, you know what, maybe Evander Kane's not who you want. I mean, obviously, things in Winnipeg went downhill very quickly. We know about the incident with Dustin Byfuglien and how a lot of his Jets teammates just did not like him. And we know for sure that there's been lots of rumors in Buffalo.
Even
off the ice, we know that there's been times where he's been suspended because he goes to an NBA All-Star game instead of, and then stays out too late and doesn't show up for practice. Those are things that teams probably don't want from a player heading into the playoffs. So I get where,
and the assault accusations.
Well, yeah, in Buffalo. Yeah, there were those as well. I get why teams, and the other thing with Kane, there were so many good wingers on this market.
Yeah.
It was all about wingers. We saw wingers who didn't even move. We saw Thomas Vanek go for nothing, or basically nothing, as we talked about. We saw Thomas Tatar. We saw Gustav Nyquist was certainly available if anybody wanted him. I think that he could have been had if anyone was willing to put up a good package to Detroit. Hoffman was available and didn't move. Max Pacioretty didn't move. And they were both heavily rumored. I mean, they didn't have to with the term left on their deals. But there was a lot of wingers out there. And so I can understand why Evander Kane didn't get the best return. Probably going to be a second-round pick unless he re-signs with the Sharks. And then, you know, GM Jack Eichel acquires his friend Danny O'Regan as well.
I hate that part. Oh, my gosh. That seems like... Okay. The Buffalo Sabres didn't need to tank to historically bad levels, but they did. Getting back from those levels can't just be about keeping Jack Eichel happy. And I understand that you need to do that to a certain extent, but just bringing in his guys isn't going to be great. Look at the way this has gone in Cleveland. All right. When these guys can't carry the team, when they can't carry their friends anymore, those players typically don't do a whole heck of a lot. You got to be bringing in real talent. When you're as bad as the Buffalo Sabres are, it can't just be about putting on a smile on Jack's face. I really don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, they now have both of his college teammates, or line mates.
Mm-hmm.
Both O'Regan and Rodriguez. And the fact is that those were good guys to have on a first line of a college team.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them belongs on the first line of an NHL team, so they're not going to play with Eichel.
That's just it. It's just frustrating.
I mean, I know O'Regan had a really strong season in the AHL last year, but he's done basically nothing at the NHL level. He's got one goal in 30-something games at the NHL level, 5 points, and is 24 years old. And I had a Sharks friend who was talking to me today, was really upset that Danny O'Regan wasn't included in the deal. He doesn't really like Evander Kane because of the rumors and things. He's like, why would we give up on... And I'm just like, you know what? Like, if you're upset about getting Evander Kane, I get that, because you don't want him in your locker room. But don't worry about what you gave up. You gave up a second-round pick, and you gave up a guy who's 24 years old and has one NHL goal. And I'm sorry. I know he had a nice AHL season. But if you're 24 and you've got one NHL goal to your name, you're probably not the guy.
Even just college players in general. Like, yeah, there's Jack Eichel, and he's an obvious example. But, I mean, how often do you see the Hobie Baker Award winner come out and be mediocre, you know? Look at guys like Drake Caggiula. You know, it's just there is a certain level of play that you get from college, and that's fine most of the time, but they're not always going to be world breakers.
No, and I think we've got some good ones. I think Will Butcher last year, Hobie Baker winner, has done some nice things. I think Alex Kerfoot has done some nice things. But, I mean, there's pedigree, and there's reasons behind guys who've been drafted usually in the fourth or fifth round. And you got to look at what you're doing in college and when you're doing it. I'm skeptical of guys who break out in their junior season.
Yeah, that's fair. Juniors.
You know, if you can do it as a freshman in college or even as a sophomore in college, then that's fine. And you also got to remember, some kids don't join college at 18. Some will spend an extra year or two at the USHL or something because their college teams don't think they're ready, and then they become 20-year-old freshmen. So you've got to be careful about those guys as well as to when they break out. You know, if you're a 20-year-old freshman, I want to see you doing it right away. If you take some time to adjust after you've sat out two extra years, or not sat out, but played in the USHL for two extra years when you could have been in college, I need to see you doing it right away.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much, you have to trade it like the CHL. And there is an aging curve, and it's a very strong aging curve. And if you're doing it at, you know, 17 versus doing it at 20, doing it at 20 involves a lot more points than doing it at 17. And so that's just something you got to remember when evaluating these guys. I believe it's your turn.
All right, I'm going to go with the Thomas Plekanec to the Toronto Maple Leafs move.
It was weird. That was a weird, weird, weird move. I get it to a certain extent. You know, Thomas Plekanec is a solid center, and they need the center depth.
Kills penalties, which they need. Matches up against top lines, which the Leafs need.
He fits the profile, you know? Like he is a solid player. In no way would I say I don't want Thomas Plekanec on my team. It doesn't strike me as a we're contending move, but it's also not a we're giving up move. It just seems, it feels very Leafs at the moment. Like, if you look at this team, I don't think it's fair to call them a cup contender yet. And I don't think a Thomas Plekanec move is a cup contender move yet. It strikes me as a team that says, you know, we're going into the playoffs. We're certainly not a bad team. Let's get a little better and see what we can do once we're there. Yeah, that's what I got out of this move.
Well, Plekanec, they're looking at a matchup with the Bruins, and Plekanec has always been excellent against the Bruins in the playoffs. He drives David Krejci up a wall, and he will drive Brad Marchand up a wall as well, depending on which line you line him up against. But he can either, you know, drive Marchand crazy or drive Krejci crazy, and basically has eliminated them as playoff players in a number of playoff series between Boston and Montreal over the years. So that's a move that I like from the Leafs' perspective. They didn't give up a heck of a lot. This feels like the Brian Boyle move. I know they gave up a second last year for Boyle. They included some prospects this year. But let's be honest, Kirby Reichel was never making the Leafs. He was probably not going to be qualified this summer. So this is now audition time in Montreal for Kirby Reichel. And if he doesn't do well, Montreal's not going to qualify him because they have plenty of depth on the wing that Kirby Reichel is going to have to live up to his draft status now or never. Rinat Valiev, I like. He wasn't cracking the Toronto defense core because their left side is the strong part of their defense with Jake Gardner and Morgan Riley there. But he could be a third pairing seventh D guy in Montreal since their strong side on their defense is the right side and not the left. So maybe he's got something. But just a second round pick for Plekanec, I think, would have been a fair offer for Montreal. And from what I understand, from what Eric Engels is reporting, Montreal has the framework of a deal in place for Thomas Plekanec on July 1st. And Plekanec knows it, and the Canadians know it. And there's a very strong possibility that unless somebody comes and makes a huge offer, you know, in that 5-day waiting period, that he's coming back to Montreal on July the 1st. So I don't mind the return that the Habs got on Plekanec at all.
No, well, it's about getting him 1,000 games, isn't it?
Well, if he will get to, if he plays every regular season game for the Leafs, he will get to 999 this season. So you could, if you signed him on, and that's the only team in the league that would have happened, because the Leafs had played more games than anyone else and only had 18 games remaining. And he needs 19 for 1,000. So he gets to 999. With the Leafs and can have his 1,000th on opening night with the Canadians if he comes back.
That would be crazy. I don't like it. Or I do like it, I should say. I don't mind it. The other thing this is it gets Toronto to 48 contracts, which for some reason Lou Lamoriello loves. I know it's all about college free agents and stuff going forward.
But they didn't dump a contract in this deal.
They were at 50 already. They dumped Reichel, didn't they?
No, they dumped Soshnikov to get to 49, and they dumped someone else. And Eric Fair got them to 48.
Oh, I forgot about Fair.
They picked up Kyle Bond in this deal from Montreal, who was doing nothing with Montreal's farm team. And I think it's a nice little, you're Bobby Bond's grandkid. You can spend a couple months in the Leafs organization kind of move. But Kyle Bond's going nowhere. and it's probably, you know, he's just playing out the string on this contract, and I don't see him getting a two-way deal after this, maybe some AHL-only deal or a European deal. He's just not doing anything at 25 in the AHL.
Yeah, that's never a good sign.
So he was a highly hyped college prospect that went to Chicago a few years ago, traded earlier in the year to Montreal for Andreas Martinsson, and just hasn't done anything with Laval.
It's your go or my go?
It's
my go, isn't it?
Yeah.
None of the trades are really standing out to me that happened today, so I'm going off the board. I'm going the trade that didn't happen, and it's your buddy Max. Are you pleased to see him stay? Are you concerned? There were some tweets that said he definitely wanted out of Montreal. What are you thinking?
I think it would have been nice to move him if you could get the right package, but I think it was all about getting a center. Florida was reportedly interested. And Dale Tallon said today there were teams that asked him about the top prospects, but he wasn't moving them. So that, to me, those putting two and two together and getting five like I do, says that the Montreal Canadiens were asking about Henrik Bjorkstrand.
Yeah.
And if you can't get him from the Panthers, then you're not giving Max Pacioretty to a division rival. I completely get that. St. Louis fell off the table and fell off as a contender for him. I heard as well that LA was reluctant to give up Gabe Vilardi. The Ducks didn't want to move Sam Steele. And so if nobody wants to move one of their centers for him, I think you've got to hold him. And judging by what Rick Nash returned, judging by what other rentals have returned at this deadline, and then the number of first-round picks that moved today, I think holding Max Pacioretty to the draft is not a big deal. And if you still don't get it at the draft, I think holding him till next year's deadline is not a huge problem. I still think you may never get that center that you want for him, but I think you can get a first and a decent prospect, even if it's a winger prospect, at next year's deadline. So why give him up for the first and the winger now when you can do that later on?
No, I completely agree. Max Pacioretty is always going to be a valuable asset on this contract. And who knows, he may even be more valuable next year just because of the season he's had so far, especially the start of the season he had so far. Or start of the season, I should say, this year. I don't mind it. You know, it's the same I feel about Mike Hoffman. If the price isn't there, if the people aren't there to make the deal worth it, don't do it, because these are incredibly talented wingers on incredibly team-friendly deals. You know, it is exactly what you want on a team, and when you've got that kind of player, you have to be dealing from a position of strength, and the Sens and the Habs had that at this deadline. And so if the deal doesn't come, hold on and wait, because you're still going to have that position of strength later on down the line.
One thing I will say about Bergevin, they're going to have 10 picks in the first five rounds of this draft, including 4 second rounders. This is time for Trevor Timmons to earn his paycheck.
Yep.
They really need to come out of this draft with some solid prospects. There's a bit of a lull if you look at Trevor Timmons' history with the Canadiens. From 2003 to 2007, he was outstanding. They were probably the best drafting team in the NHL over that period of time. And so that's encouraging for you. If you look at 2008 to 2012, they're probably the worst drafting team in the NHL over that period of time. Pretty much only pulling out Nathan Beaulieu, who's now with the Sabres, and Brendan Gallagher. as legit NHL players, along with non-legit NHL players Gabriel Dumont and Jared Tenorti.
Oh, hold on. Gabriel Dumont was on an NHL roster this year, I will have you know.
Well, yes, but he's not a legit NHL player.
He's no longer there.
Jared Tenorti's played some games in the NHL as well, but he's not a legit NHL player.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Okay, so that's kind of where I was going with those two. A few other guys who've gotten some time. And then after, but one thing about the 2008 to 2012 years is that they didn't have either a first or a second rounder was missing in each of those years. And some years they had as little as five picks. A third rounder is gone as well. He didn't have a lot to work with in terms of quality of picks. He's not going to have that excuse now. And if you go from 2012 on, it's hit and miss. You know, 2012, I don't hate the Galchenyuk move. People are criticizing him. But if you look at the rest of that draft, he's still the highest scoring player out of that draft.
I don't know how you can be upset about picking Galchenyuk. Like, just because the player in Montreal haven't worked out exactly as expected, Alex Galchenyuk is still a fantastic player.
Yeah, and he's the highest scoring player in that draft. You've got Charles Hudon out of the fifth round of that draft. You've had some bad luck. I always thought, what was his name? The one who got meningitis.
Oh, jeepers. Can I phone a friend?
Yeah, I can't think. I'm drawing a blank today. We've got so many names because of the trade deadline. I always thought he had a good chance to be an NHLer. But meningitis really set him back and took him out. And then you had Martin Rivet in 2013, who I thought looked really good and then had an enlarged heart problem. So problems that a head scout can't anticipate. So there's that. But 2013, he pulls out Arturi Lehkonen out of that draft. Jacob De La Rose is probably an NHLer. Mike McCarron, they probably went a bit too high on, and I didn't like. 2000, you know, moving on, there's Victor Mete, there's Mikhail Sergachev, there's Nikita Sherbak, looks like an NHLer from what we've seen this season. He's really developed nicely. There's Noah Juulsen, who's played very well in the AHL and is going to get his chance with the Habs now. There's some prospects that are coming. There's Jake Evans, who they need to sign out of the NCAA. I really like last year's draft. They have four defensemen in the WHL, all really performing well this season, including two studs in Josh Brook and Cale Fleury. And Ryan Poehling has looked fantastic with St. Cloud State. So I think that when you give him picks and you don't take away his first and second rounders every year, that Trevor Timmons has done pretty well. So he's gotten some criticism, but if he doesn't do well in this draft with the number of firsts and with the first, a very high first, with will be some very high seconds between Chicago and Montreal's pick, a middle of the road second in Toronto's pick, and a low second in Washington's pick, then a third rounder. Potential for three of the picks to be in the fourth round if LA makes the playoffs and if Al Montoya plays two more games for the Edmonton Oilers. And then your fifth. I mean, Montreal's going to have 10 picks in this draft and they'll all be at minimum in the first five rounds. And there's potential that 9 of the 10 picks would be in the first four rounds.
That's crazy.
So
that's how you rebuild.
Yeah, that's a very quick retool. The mm-hmm. Rangers also have a ton of picks in this draft now.
Yeah, I think they have like 8 or something like that.
Yeah, I think they have like 8 or 9 in the first three rounds.
They've been stockpiling for a while.
So and they just stockpiled with Josh Holden and Rick Nash and Ryan McDonagh. They've stockpiled a cache of picks in the first three rounds as well.
All right, your go.
All right, so if we're doing non-trades, we've got to go with Erik Karlsson.
Yeah, we do. I spent my day, I think, just checking my pulse every so often, making sure it was still there. Every time a tweet came in from Bob McKenzie, I felt my stomach drop. I didn't want to see Erik Karlsson get moved today. And he... Erik Karlsson is the Ottawa Senators. There's simply no other way to put that. You know, this is not a team that has an identity. You know, they're not the Canadiens. They're not the Leafs. The history isn't there. The crest, Lord knows the crest sure as hell isn't there. This has been a team of faces.
40 times.
That's just it. You know, this has always been a team of faces. You know, there was Alfie for the longest time. Yashin, Spezza. Now it's Karlsson. The Ottawa Senators are Erik Karlsson. And when you move him after everything that's gone on with the team this year, the way you've treated your players, the salary dumps, the rumors, the fans buying a billboard outside of the CTC, there is just so much going on there that I think a Karlsson trade, not only for fans, but I got to think for players in free agency, that's got to be the last straw, you know? Like, that's got to be, all right, I don't want anything to do with this organization. And so I think just holding off and not trading Karlsson, even if it was just because you didn't get a great deal, is the right move. The Sens are coming off their worst week of season ticket holder renewals, according to Travis Yost. And we all knew that was going to be a problem. And they were down last year and you fired the president. I think this is just such a massive mistake. And I don't know what the relationship is like between Pierre Dorion and Erik Karlsson. Both player and GM said it was good, said it was fine. And I'm cautiously naive, perhaps, in believing that. I really do think the problem is with Eugene Melnyk. I know there was that whole kerfuffle with the music with Dorion, but on the whole, I think keeping Karlsson is the right move. You know, and if he gets traded in June or July, I should say, it's going to be a mistake, and you're never going to get value for him. But if St. Louis wasn't willing to lose, you know, any of those top four forward prospects, and realistically you want all four, if no one was there to give the right price for Karlsson, you should never consider moving him. I know some people were skeptical too. I had a few questions actually about, you know, well, what about Karlsson's health? If you look at his underlying numbers, especially in the last month and a bit, Karlsson has been Erik Karlsson in every sense of the word. He's been mired by a bad PDO, terrible shooting percentage, terrible save percentage. You know, there's a reason his goals for percentage when he's on the ice is so bad. It's not entirely his fault. I mean, you look at just even the partners he's had to play with. Johnny Oduya, his most common partner, couldn't even fetch them a seventh round pick. I mean, this is a guy who literally was on waivers. And yes, he was picked up, but are you, like, really, you couldn't get anything for Johnny Oduya? He was playing beside Erik Karlsson for that long. And if other GMs see that that's how bad his partner is, imagine how Erik Karlsson felt. All in all, it's right not to trade him. It was a frustrating day. It's been a frustrating week as a Senators fan, just watching this team nuke itself over and over and over again. But I think Pierre Dorion bumbled his way into the right move.
I agree with all that. I certainly agree with all that. I think if anybody out here, I just learned about him. Apparently he's very popular in Senator circles, but I recently, as in recently being a few months ago, learned about Brian 5 or 6 on Twitter. And I think he is the man who speaks for all of Sens Nation right now.
He does. He does.
And so if you want to check out his videos that he takes with his either iPhone or Samsung device and just Periscope videos that he makes...
Steve Dangle, but like less quality, more rage.
Yes. And you know, it's my new favorite thing. I watched maybe like 10 of his videos this morning while we were
waiting for
a trade to happen.
And they're great.
It was amazing. And so I think he speaks for all of Sens Nation right now. And I think that you know, that's where your season ticket renewals are not coming in. And the thing that I see is I don't see that getting better by holding on to Carlson right now. I think the fans have lost total faith in Eugene Melnyk and the Sens organization. I really think the only way to restore faith and get ticket sales back up would be for Eugene Melnyk to sell the team.
There is a Melnyk out campaign on GoFundMe that is both trending and has raised almost $10,000 for an ad campaign that says Melnyk out. That's where season ticket holders are spending their money.
Yes.
Nearly $10,000.
Yeah.
For Melnyk out. By almost 400 people. This is in 3 days that it's reached this. And I understand what you're saying, that, like, you know, keeping Carlson isn't going to get people to renew, but trading him isn't either. The only answer is to get rid of Eugene Melnyk, or at the very least, get him on his knees begging for Cyril Leader to come back. That man is actually adored in Ottawa. People actually liked him. I mean, I think it's pretty rare that people know the president of operations, not of hockey, you know, not the general manager, but the president of the team by name, and actually like the guy. But Pierre Dorion had that effect. Cyril Leader had that effect in Ottawa. Bring him back. Let him market to the fans. Get Melnyk the hell out of Ottawa. Leave him in Barbados. The man cannot be near the team, and he has to stop using the team as his bank account. Owning a sports franchise is not a profitable endeavor, and that's exactly what Eugene Melnyk tries to make it, and he does it by cutting funding, by having terrible in-arena services. I mean, don't get me started on missing Chicklets. It's a joke. You know, bring an actual Ottawa axe. Make it fun to come to the arena. Don't just shill every penny until you get downtown in 2020 and expect the fan base to come back, because by the time we get there, by the time 2020 or 2022 rolls around, or whenever the heck the arena gets built, I'm not sure there's going to be a Senators fan base left if Melnyk is there. This screams Tampa Bay Devil Rays to me.
That and the Toronto Argonauts and the, you know, yeah, kept hearing forever, if you know, it's the stadium, if we get into BMO, it'll be fine, if we get into BMO, it'll be fine, and it hasn't been fine, and I want to see what this Grey Cup win does for them, and whether it brings fans back next year or not, but, I mean, it's taken an awful lot to get 2 years of really disappointing attendance at BMO for the Argos, and it wasn't just the stadium. There was more to it, to the loss in the fan base, and I think the Senators are going to feel the same thing. And I really feel like maybe if you signed Erik Karlsson to an extension, that you'd get the season ticket holders back. But as it stands right now, as an outsider, and I don't know what it feels like in Ottawa, but as an outsider, this has a feeling of inevitability that Erik Karlsson is leaving. He didn't leave today, but it's a feeling that he is gone, and it's a matter of when, not if. And so that, to me, says that this isn't going to bring fans back. This isn't going to bring hope back to Ottawa. No. The only way to really do that would be to either Eugene Melnyk to sell the team, for Erik Karlsson to sign an extension, or for a new face, maybe Erasmus Dahlin to emerge onto the scene. Short of one of those things happening, I don't know how you restore faith in this fan base.
No, you're bang on with all of that. There is this was not a good day. Regardless of the ending, it still feels as though Erik Karlsson was traded. It feels like he's gone. More than anything, it feels like the Sens are gone. And I know that they're still there, but, like, people outside of Ottawa have to realize the caliber of person, not just of player, but of person that's been driven out of this team over the last few years. You know, like, it's not just this year. I read this fantastic piece today, and it was someone just speaking from their heart and talking about, you know, in the last few years when Alfie left, my heart cracked a little. You know, when Fisher left, my heart cracked a little. And when Spezza left, my heart cracked a little. And when Zibanejad left, I cried on the floor for hours. And then Alfie came back, and there was a bit of hope. And then we drove him out again, and I didn't know what was left. And then Kyle Turris left, and it felt hopeless. And now Erik Karlsson is leaving. And it was shared hundreds of times by Sens fans. And it rings so true. These aren't just players that he's shipping out. I mean, these were quite literally the faces of the franchise that Eugene Melnyk is running out of town in the most literal sense of the word. I mean, Kyle Turris loved Ottawa. He loved Ottawa, and the community loved him back. I don't know that there's been a more adored player on the team in recent years behind Alfredsson and Karlsson. And that's a really high bar. And to see all of these players who you just feel you had such a connection with and who really put their heart and soul into the community, forced out, wanting out of Ottawa. It's just so hopeless. You're just left with this sense of nihilism, because no matter who comes in next, if it is Rasmus Dahlin, if it's, you know, Braden Point or Mikhail Sergachev from a possible Tampa deal, or Jordan Kyrou from St. Louis, whoever it is, you're left with this sense of, well, they'll just leave too. You know, no matter who we bring in, they're going to have to deal with Melnyk too, and they're going to go. Hey, every elite player the Senators have had has been run out of town. Alfie is the only one who stayed, and even then, he got run out to Detroit, and he got run out when he came back. The problem starts and ends with Eugene Melnyk.
Yeah, and I totally get why Sens fans are so frustrated by Eugene Melnyk. We had an article on the site a couple months back, and maybe we can share it again with the hatred that's going on to Eugene Melnyk right now, but about comparing Harold Ballard and Eugene Melnyk, and I just thought it's the same thing, but he's running all the beloved players out of town, penny pinching all the time, and just it's so Harold Ballard what Eugene Melnyk is doing right now.
Yeah, I saw a really interesting tweet the other day, and it basically said, how many NHL owners can you name? Almost anyone can name Eugene Melnyk.
Yeah.
You know, who you got after that? MLSC, they're an organization.
Yeah, MLSC, Terry Pegula.
Molson Group. Yeah, Pegulas.
Yeah.
Molson.
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank now. What's his name? Kroenke.
Yep, Stan Kroenke.
Yeah.
For Colorado.
And that's only because he owns other teams.
Kroenke Sports.
Yeah, he's made his name doing other things. Aquilini.
Does FSC own the Bruins? Fenway Sports and Entertainment Group.
No, Jeremy FSG. Jacobs.
Okay.
The worst owner in the NHL, as far as fans are. Not for Bruins fans, but for hockey fans.
Yeah.
The worst owner in the NHL is Jeremy Jacobs. He's the one behind the lockouts, really, the really driving force.
Both of them.
Yeah, that Bettman gets blamed for, but it's really Jeremy Jacobs pushing that envelope. But yeah, you know, you're at a 10 or 15 at most, and we're hardcore hockey fans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we nailed that, and we got to maybe 6.
Yeah, and you know, where's everyone else going? There's the, you know, the 30-man consortium in Calgary, and the Daryl Cates in Edmonton, and you know, we could probably get to a dozen.
Vegas is easy. The Vegas Sports Entertainment Group.
Yeah, or, well, run by Bill Foley.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's where we're going to get. And so where are our others going to get? And Eugene Melnyk is going to be at the top of everyone's list.
Yeah. If he's not, he's right behind their owner.
Yeah, their own team's owner, yeah.
Yeah. It's just frustrating.
So.
I think that's a good place to wrap, unless you got more you want.
Well, a couple moves that I think would be significant at any other point in time. Patrick Hornquist. Let's do Patrick Hornquist. And then the last thing I think we need to talk about are the Olympic results.
Oh, yeah, we haven't touched on that yet. Man, there's been so much hockey recently that, like, it's tough to keep up with. Let's go with Patrick Hornquist. 5.3 by 5 years. He's 31 right now. 5.3 sounds right to me. I think he was on, 4.5 on his old contract or about that. For the cap hit, for if it's going up to 80, I don't mind this at all. He's an invaluable player to that team. Really, really solid. Even under the current cap, I think 5.3 is a fair price for him. So when you consider it going up, I love it. The only question is, how will that look when he's 34 to 36?
Yeah.
I think that's the only concern. Because he plays a tough game.
Yeah, he goes to the net. He's the modern day,
He's a modern day Holmstrom almost.
Well, that's who I was going with, but I hated my phrase of modern day. He's the new, he's Holmstrom 2.0.
Yeah, Holmstrom light.
Yeah, so he plays that go-to-the-net style. He plays with the best centers in the league and gets to the front of the net and creates havoc for them and does an important job for them. And he scores his goals, and he even scored in Nashville. I mean, I don't want to put too much emphasis on the
No, he's always been effective.
He's always been effective. A former Mr. Irrelevant from the NHL draft. Mm-hmm. So I'm a fan of his. I think 5.3 is a good deal. 5 is a little long for me, but sometimes it takes a little bit of term to get it done. And we see teams do stupid things on the trade deadline to take on contracts of guys with name value like Rick Nash. So
yeah.
You know,
yeah, this is definitely movable in the future.
Yeah, so I don't have a big problem with it. I think the Penguins have made some very smart moves over the last couple of days.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Sam, I'm blanking on his name. What's Sam's last name? Their analytics guy. He used to run War on Ice.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about.
Regardless, people know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He has been he's been so strong for them. They like, and I know this is more than just him, but he's been invaluable to that team over the last couple of years, and I find myself loving almost every move Pittsburgh makes, except Josh Juris. I didn't get that. I know it's just depth, but I didn't really understand it.
They didn't give up anything for him.
Oh, I know.
They gave up Greg McKegg, who, besides having a great name, is not much of an NHL player.
No, he's really nothing there. So
I mean, they didn't give up a pick. They didn't give up anything. Josh Juris, I know he's not great, but they gave up Greg McKegg to get him, so, and no pick. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. So what are you going to do? Olympic hockey. Germany almost beat the OAR. My favorite stat is that under every name but Russia, the players who make up the Russian team, including, you know, Soviet Union, have won gold.
Yeah, the unified
Russia just team. Can't win gold as itself.
Yeah, the unified team, the Soviet Union, the Olympic athletes from Russia, they've all won gold. Russia, not so much. So, I mean, I the tournament was good. It was AHL caliber hockey.
I'll be honest, I really struggled to get into it. You know, with everything that was going on in my life and the timing of the actual games themselves, I had a really tough time convincing myself that that was what I was going to spend my night watching because of the caliber of hockey.
I watched, you know, a period and a half of Team Canada and Germany. I watched a period in overtime of Russia and Germany, and that was about it on the men's side.
Yeah. I watched the women's games.
Those were a blast. I watched a lot of the women's games. And now I had someone say to me that the women's hockey was a higher caliber of hockey. And no, just don't go there. The women's hockey, even with me saying that the men's hockey was AHL caliber, it's not. Let's be honest, people. They're the best women in the world, and they're fun to watch, and I love watching it, and I love what it does to inspire young girls to play hockey, and I enjoy the heck out of it. But it's the same as any other sport. It's the same as shot put. The guys who are in, 40th place in a men's Olympic shot put beat the best woman in women's shot put. The guys who can't qualify for the finals in the 100 meters are beating the women's time. It's just physiological differences, and we have to accept that. But that women's tournament was not as fast or as high a caliber of play as the men's tournament. But knowing in the back of your mind that it was the best women's hockey, to me, made it more enjoyable to watch than to watch second-rate men's hockey.
That's exactly what it is. And if you're gonna talk about caliber, it's just it. You can't compare one to the other. It's just you have to look at it as its own sport. And I think that's what this Olympic to me really put out. I've been a fan of women's hockey for a few years now. I was a big supporter of the NWHL when it first started. I have a little less support for it now just because of all the drama that's surrounded it and the way it was run. But I've been a fairly consistent women's hockey fan. This to me felt like the tournament that starts things off, that gets people going. This is more than just every 4 years. Having Hillary Knight, I know it wasn't televised, but having her at the NHL All-Star Game, little things like that. This to me felt like the tournament where people start watching or start paying attention to, or get a curiosity at least about women's hockey. And it was exciting, and there was so much to enjoy about this tournament, especially that gold medal game. And for anyone who is new to women's hockey, and especially if you're a Canadian fan and expected to see Canada dominate, what you're seeing is a program that's really quickly realizing is it needs to step its game up. And for those of you who just started the sport, you're at a fantastic time in women's hockey, where the big names, the Maddie Philippe-Poulin, the Hillary Knight, the Megan Duggan, Brianna Decker, all of these names they're not at the end of their careers per se, but they're definitely getting there, and you're seeing new names come into play, like Gigi Marvin, who is fantastic, and the best comparison I can give is probably like a better Miles Wood for the Devils. And so it's just such an exciting time, and watching that hockey and watching the parity. I mean, the Japanese team beat Finland, I want to say. I think it was Finland that they beat. And you just never see that in men's hockey. But, the women's game is growing so quickly, and in places where you wouldn't expect it to, it's just such a fun time to start following it and to watch it on the international stage. And it really, really captured my attention this year. It always does, but this year I was watching the Olympics solely to watch women's hockey.
Yeah, no, it was a fun tournament. I hate that it ended in a shootout. The U.S. was the better team in overtime. I will give them that, even though Canada had the best scoring chance in overtime.
I thought they were going to win it right at the end
with that power play off the post. Yeah. But
oh my gosh.
But the U.S. dominated that overtime up to the power play. We're the better. I mean, if we went into analytics, they were the better team analytically during that game. And
even if you just play a second overtime, the U.S. is winning that. I mean, Maddie Philippe-Poulin was really the only one doing anything, and she looked exhausted.
Yeah. And eventually they were going to beat Zavidos as well as Zavidos played in that game. So, it's a time for Canada's hockey program to reevaluate. We've been competing with the U.S. and getting to overtime and being in close games basically on the strength of our goaltending.
Yeah.
If you really watch the games, if you really watch the program, we have Marie-Philippe Poulin, who is probably the best women's player in the world. It's probably, you know, it's either her or Hillary Knight. You can make that complaint, and I will take some will say it's because I'm Canadian, but I will say Poulin is the best women's
player. No, I'd take Poulin.
And our goaltending is better, but overall the U.S. team has been better. And it's time to reevaluate and figure out what we're doing in our programs up here in Canada. We're going to lose. She said she may come back for another Olympics, but who knows what kind of shape she's going to be in when she's not going to be playing in the CWHL as much in Megan Augusta. And she's probably the second best player on that team. Melody Daou also had a very good tournament, ended up being named Olympics MVP. For her goal scoring exploits, but overall the Canadian team needs to pick up its development, and we're seeing it at the under 18 level where they picked up bronze this year, lost to Russia in a game. We're seeing it at the under 20 level. We're seeing, you know, the U.S. is winning more and more golds, and I think finally losing at the Olympics will be the wake-up call that Canada needs.
I think so too. I think Hockey Canada gets away with the fact that women's hockey outside of the Olympics doesn't get the attention it deserves in Canada. And so I think finally losing here will be, or should be, I should say, the catalyst for change. Because it's, what, 9 of the last 10 world championships they've lost at the top level? Like, you just can't have that kind of record. Not if you're Canada, not if you're hockey.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, we won in 2010 and we won in 2014 on a miracle, and because we kept winning the Olympics, it didn't change, even though we were losing the World Championships every year. And so that's where Hockey Canada needs to change.
Despite my allegiances, though, I was so happy to see Megan Duggan and Hillary Knight have a gold medal around their neck. I'm a huge Boston Pride fan, and just to see Knight there with the medal that... Like, let's be realistic. She's deserved that medal for the last 8 years. I was just so happy for her. You know, it really felt like a proud moment almost. And I know that's the wrong word and the wrong emotion to be feeling, but I was just genuinely happy for her, despite, you know, who I wished would have won.
Yeah. And then I've had to hear it from my girlfriend for a week, so.
Is your girlfriend American?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad for you.
Yeah, so I've had to hear it for a long time now. It hasn't even been a week, but it feels like it's been a month.
Well, at least you didn't have to deal with Pacioretty leaving.
No, and I deserve it, I guess, because, you know, whenever times when she gets mad at me and we're having an argument, I just... throw my arms up in the air and go, Sidney Crosby, the golden goal, or Marie-Philippe Poulin, the golden goal, just to diffuse an argument. I probably deserve it after, you know, 8 years of rubbing.
You know, that's coming back your way now. Yeah. You have 4 years of this.
Yeah, I've got 4 years of the shootout winner. I, you know, my defense at this point has been it was a tie. and they won a skills competition, but it was really a tie game.
It's not gonna hold up.
I don't know. I don't think it will either. the other defense is that it's 4-2.
There you go. I like that.
It's 4-2. So that one's worked a little bit better than my attempt at calling it a tie game.
Recency bias, you're still going to lose out.
Yeah, I'm probably still going to lose. All right, that sounds like a good point to wrap up the show. And interesting deadline. Before we go, after the deadline, instant reaction, what's your cup final and who's winning?
Tampa over Winnipeg.
Okay. I've still got... Nashville beating Tampa.
Oh, you think so? Really?
Yeah. I think that that Nashville defense, when they all play 30 minutes a night, when the four of them all play, you know, 28 to 30 minutes, and the fourth pair is playing, or the third pair is playing 5 minutes each, it's going to be so hard to beat them in a playoff series.
Here's the thing for me, all right? One, goaltending, and two, I think with McDonough, the Lightning's defense is, while it's not better, it is good enough to hang, and I like the Lightning's forward core more. That's my rationale. And I think just Winnipeg is going to luck through because I would like them to. There's really no logic in that one. I would just like it to happen. But yeah, Winnipeg, Nashville are the two coming out of the West.
Yeah, well, that's a second-round series, it looks like.
I know. And I was thinking about this the other day. Before we wrap it up real quick, of your top six teams, four of them will meet in the conference semifinals.
Oh, but that's how it should be.
No, that's not how it should be.
No, because... Yeah.
1-8. 1-8 in each conference, and at least let them meet up later on.
No, but you of your top six teams, you'd expect... Or, sorry, your top four teams, you'd expect to be as semifinalists, right?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, right now, they're split right down the middle. So if you had top four teams, 2-2, you'd expect those to be your conference finals in each one.
Yeah.
So, I think if everything
goes according to plan, you've got Vegas,
yeah, you're right. They will.
Vegas against the winner of Nashville and
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. And if you got six top teams, the two will have to face off in the eight, right?
You're right. It just feels dumb having them all in the same conference.
I see the top two teams in the West playing in the second round, and I see the top two teams in the East playing in the second round in Boston and Tampa.
Yeah.
Unless Pittsburgh's now we're calling them a top team after the moves they've made and how they seem to have found the way to flip the switch, so to speak.
The
recent run of play. So Pittsburgh, you know, maybe is – But you just feel like Pittsburgh's getting a walkthrough to the conference final in that division.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can safely call Pittsburgh a top team in the East.
Yeah.
With the addition of Broussard.
Yeah, and I just feel like they're just going to get a walkthrough over the Metro.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
I can't see anyone beating them there. But I think that the Tampa takes them out in the conference final because I'm tired of Pittsburgh in the final.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. I would like to see the Lightning in the Cup.
All right, so we'll wrap it up. We'll get this to you to edit and put out for trade deadline day.
There we go.
All right. Good night.
Thank you. You too.
And good night to all our listeners out there.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.